this is just one of them, so that if a person doesn't learn here, they may learn someplace else, or they may, you know, learn differently here.
Is what you're saying is one of the problems with, like, poverty and that kind of thing is it's too big. It's like if you weigh 300 pounds to get to 120, it's really a gold dartboard. But if you could, then you're saying that God's going to take care of those people anyway, and you do your thing, and whatever good you can do is that much more good.
Yep.
And not to worry about the whole thing. I mean, not to worry about
the whole thing. Because you've got to do what you can do. Absolutely got to understand that God has got the whole situation in hand.
Yeah.
I mean, that, and you do your best shot, but you got to trust God.
That's
you know,
much easier.
It's much easier to trust God.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, and the whole concept of being able to do.
Remember, God wants you to be joyful in your work, and He wants you to work towards good, but He wants you to do it joyfully. And if you let the burden and the weight of all the human misery in the world get you down, I mean, that was getting to me. I was at a church over in Cincinnati Wednesday night, and they had a food bank for the poor. You know, if you were poor, you could just come and they'd give you grocery bags full of food. And the priest there took me to meet some of the people that were both passing out the food and the people that were waiting for the food. And I got real heavy. I got, like, real, real heavy. And I had to go pray for a while. And I had to go ask God to take it off me because I was getting... I mean, I was sinking like a rock into a real big depression because there's like really beautiful people. It's like mostly mothers, right?
Uh-huh.
Mostly mothers. And they're coming there lining up for free food, and you could feel their humiliation and the degradation of asking for free food and the need. I mean, they had to fight all those feelings because they really had a need. They weren't freeloaders. They were... and I had to... I said... God, I mean, I'm thinking, like, what should I could sell my car, you know, I could sell my car and, like, then these
but
people,
then
you know.
Could, but that isn't right.
Yeah, no.
Okay,
I mean, it wasn't right for me because I need the car to get around.
Well,
yeah,
you know, for the, I don't know.
You know, if you're going to be a car and the problem would still be there, you know, that
yeah.
You would help a few people, but the problem would still be there.
Yeah
no, Jerry, what you said, that's a very different problem. Somebody might say, well, if God will take care of it, then I can ignore it.
Oh, no, I don't mean that.
Well, I know. That seems like it could be a fine line.
But, I mean, I do. I'll tell you concrete things. My wife and I give to the United Appeal a reasonable share. I give a reasonable share at my church, and I give extra at my church for... You know, like at Thanksgiving and Christmas and Easter and stuff like that. And the other thing I do is, like, I try and raise people's consciousness about it. So, you know, what I do isn't enough, but I feel like it's adequate.
You don't know if it's enough.
I don't know. Right. You're right.
That's a problem I have.
But that's okay.
I don't feel confident that I know what is good or bad. If I want to put a polarity on anything, it's to use poverty as an example, and I'm not saying that it falls within range, but how do I know that poverty isn't appropriate in this big system on this planet right now?
Right. That's a real good point. So, in a way, that indicates exactly what the curriculum is, isn't it? Is to learn how to discern, to learn how to make those kinds of judgments, and to learn when not to make them, too. Like, a lot of times I make judgments and then I find out, you know, 2 weeks later that what I should have been doing was not making judgments. Right? I mean, what you just said is, like, exactly the point, which is that is what the curriculum is trying to learn how we are supposed to learn and what to learn. I mean, there are some things that I'm absolutely certain of and I don't think this is going to change. Like, I don't think God is capricious. I know God feels. I know God wants us good for us. I mean, these are absolutes, and I'm pretty unchanged on those, and hopefully I'll even become more committed to them. But there are lots of things that I screw up on all the time. I'm a teacher, okay? I'm an art teacher. And this doesn't sound like a big deal, but on some levels, it's kind of important. On certain levels, it's important. And I have to make judgments to say, like, But what you really want to do in this picture, I mean, I'm telling them. You know, they come to me for advice and help, and I'm trying to figure out what they want, and I'm telling them what to do, and it's like, who gives me the right? You know? I mean, do I make mistakes? Sure. But, I mean, I do my best, and the way I do it is I try and be sensitive. I watch, and if I say, you know, you need to make the sky darker because it's not enough drama in the picture, and I watch your face, and if your face, like, looks like you're saying, he doesn't understand what I'm trying to do. I go, but then on the other hand, what were you really thinking about with this light? You know, I mean, being sensitive is a way that I can make the right decisions. You know, not like I have all the knowledge in the world, but being sensitive to where you are as a teacher. So, I mean, the question is being it all the time. That's the really tricky part, is being it all the time, going into everything without, like, a lot of preconceptions, without, like, a lot of sense of, like, I know everything, and going, and the incredible part is just living fully and totally in the thing that you're in, and just being there, no past, no future, just being 100% involved and engaged in what you're doing, and taking the chance that you're going to make mistakes, not trying to be perfect, right? That's you know, that's another thing. It's not trying to be perfect. I think that's a real big trap. It's like, man, if I say anything, it might be wrong. Yeah, then I'm not perfect.
Big trap is
that
trying to be perfect.
I have something that I think about. What I keep coming back to is that it doesn't matter what our actions are, the content wise, but what matters is that we monitor that we are involving right action. The content doesn't matter as much as the content.
And what you said is they're loving right actions where you are now.
Yeah.
You know, it's all right to be where you are now.
Well, as I said,
you'll do better.
Is evaluation, like when we sit there and go, well, is that the right thing to do? That's actually fear.
This is made absolutely clear to me that there's no difference in this world between being president of the United States and being a laundryman.
The janitor in the church.
Yeah, there's no difference. They don't evaluate people on those kinds of things. They care about you in very different ways than on...
Getting back to the poverty thing that started here, did you discuss choosing what you come back to, or, you know, if there is such a thing as reincarnation? Do I choose?
I didn't discuss anything.
No.
Yeah. Sorry, don't know. What? I wasn't into this stuff, so I didn't. You know, I mean, I didn't have like a lot of that sort of thing.
We'll give you a minute. Go ahead.
Here's the recording angel. Once I was talking to Howard, you suggested that in a discussion with that is. That there's an infinite number of ways to reach God,
yeah.
And that it was your opinion that reincarnation would be one of the ways possible, because that was what you entertained.
Oh, yeah.
And the contract that you entered into,
yeah.
With God. Yeah. And then we got into the discussion that if you entertain reincarnation as the way you want to reach God, and you can change your mind and just believe in heaven, it might be quicker.
Mm-hmm.
If you believe you have to have
20
lifetimes as opposed to
leaving
at the end of this time, you're in heaven, what you're leaving is might be
yep.
Death.
Yep.
Well,
it's
kind of
like
you
level.
You would set up your
expectations. You know, just think of this. If you believe that God can only love you if you're perfect, and otherwise you're going to suffer for an eternity in hell, you're going to get a little piece of that belief. Yeah.
Okay, so then you're believing in hell now.
I believe in bad things can happen to you in the other world, but the idea of God putting a person, you know, forever and ever in eternal punishment is not.
Yeah, I just visited Mexico a few weeks ago, and I was walking through some back streets with a woman I met that was also a fellow touring person, and I was really getting into the people and the faces, and I felt really at peace with it. And we got back to where we were staying, and that night we were outside, you know, full moon. It was just a real nice time to be talking. And she was really sad and really getting into a depression because of the poverty she saw. And I was trying to show her the other side of it, that I didn't get into the anguish and pain. I was feeling the inner peace that they were feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And it was such a sharp contrast because we both saw the same exact thing.
Mm-hmm.
We both were foreign to that environment.
But the perception.
But the perception,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So things like poverty and hunger or whatever issue that there is might not be something to get upset over. It might be an opportunity to express.
Well said. Really well said.
Do we want them to have our cake and ice cream, or do we want them to have something more appropriate to them? You know,
yeah.
I think too many people here in the United States want other people in other countries to live like we do. And that's a possibility.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But the thing is, now, we're all talking hypothetically because right now we're not doing anything. The only thing we're doing is we are the monsters of war in this world. 90% of the federal budget goes directly towards continuing a state of warfare in the world. And I'm excluding Social Security. In terms of... What? No, Gorbadal did on NPR.
Not me.
But what you're mentioning, the future, sounds very much like Bob Monroe's second book, Far Journey.
I haven't read it. I should read it.
Some great parallels in what our pursuit goes. How do you relate your experience when you were on the other side to the classic out-of-body experience that we hear about it and talk of when the vehicle is parked one place and people go looking in the mirrors?
What I think is that an out-of-body experience that you can not only actually do that, I believe that it's well possible, but I also think that you could encounter other dimensions of the world that exist. And that it could be real tricky. I'm not quite sure how mechanically it works, and it seemed like if you got too hung up in another dimension, how would you get back again? I don't know. The other thing is that in this world, there are a lot of people who are here who are not in heaven, and they are not angelic, and there's a lot of people hanging out here for one reason or another. Some people are sent back as spirits to witness, to learn by being around. Yeah, exactly. Some people are so attached to this world that they can't bear to leave it. And they die in their spirits and they hang around and hang around. And they basically want to be here. And they're hanging out here.
Are these your perceptions then, I guess?
If you're saying is this your perception as opposed to what you're actually told?
Both. That the varieties of levels of experiences that we can have. I wanted to know what it was like, what was the uniform way for people to go through the transition from death to heaven. That was my question. And what they showed me, that there was no one way. Each way was suited for the individuals. And that later on, this gentleman, in my sense of the number that our spirits are around, for a while there, I was like really getting into being with the spirits that were around me. And I realized that some were more divine, more angelic. Some were like, I'm just real mean-spirited and no good. You know? And some were like real passive and didn't want to be engaged in anything. And I was trying to figure out, classify who all these different groups are. You know, what they're about and stuff like that. And I got some help with that. And basically, I don't want to have anything to do with anybody but the real good guys. Because the other people have needs that I'm not interested in fulfilling.
You don't want to have to be affiliated with the highly motivated? Did I understand that right?
No. The only spiritual beings I want to have anything to do with are angelic beings. I don't want to have anything to do with any of the other beings.
Oh, okay.
Even though they may want to have a lot to do with us.
We use an affirmation that asks for help from any energy source equal to or greater than us. And I've always had problems with using an equal to. It's like, why do I want to communicate with somebody who's equal to me? If I want help, I'm going to ask for the big guy.
Cousin Snow.
Well, it's true. Is that kind of what you're talking about? Is that you're wanting it from the ones way up there,
mm-hmm.
rather than help even from an equal?
Mm-hmm.
And that some of these people aren't...
Because just because... I'm quoting Ram Dass now, but just because someone's dead doesn't mean they are wise. Wise or good.
Can I ask a couple of questions here? I'm having a hard time getting them. Yeah. One of them, I think maybe you can answer. In Far Journeys, at near the end of the book, and, you know, when they're in the year 3000 or whatever... And he's talking about where God's interest is in harvesting Lush.
Yeah, good question.
Oh, no, don't ask that one.
For me about Lush, I mean, it's got to be different than love because you can't harvest love.
Well, yeah. That's Bob Monroe's metaphor for very similar what is biblical language and for what Howard is saying. I'm not finding any contradictions here.
Mm-hmm.
The God harvesting Lush is about those that are, since they can tap into what we feel, are hoping that we will purify our emotions to the point of unconditional love.
And they're loosely speaking of love.
Right. Okay. Right. And the purest form of douche being all emotion,
mm-hmm.
the purest form is unconditional love.
Okay.
But all form of emotion feeds them and is loosh. Because emotion is the stuff with which we grow.
How do you spell loosh?
L-O-O-S-H.
That's
just a fictitious word.
I know, but Spanish for light is loose.
L-U-S-H.
I'll tell you something. Here's a great mystery. God needs you more than you need God. And you need God a lot.
That's a lot of what that story of Lush is about, is that they need
get some more.
Produce
elaborate on that.
What we produce.
I think he sure okay. would be bored without us.
What do you think about the concept that we are one with God?
Well,
like the Rasta stuff that I am God type of dialogue, or the Shirley MacLaine type of dialogue.
No, I think that's being really sloppy with language, because I am not God. I can at times, I mean, God's divine presence is present with me. Or as Master Eckhart, I saw him lying around here somewhere, so God is closer to me than I am to myself. But I am not God. Everything's God in the sense that God made everything, so therefore everything's God. But that doesn't get you anywhere.
What?
Is that what they mean?
Yeah.
Oh, then fine.
We're all part of God.
Yeah, this chair's part of God, too.
Yeah. Your feeling is that it gets misinterpreted or that it's being sloppy.
Yeah, in the sense that, I mean, that scene where Shirley's on the beach going, I am God, I am God. I said, okay, do something. Do something God-like, you know, like calm the sea, you know.
Take an ego perspective.
Yeah, that's the danger that I see in it. But to go back to this thing about... why does God need us more than we need God? Is that, first of all, God created all this for a variety of reasons and created you and me and all this stuff. You know, so you think on the one hand, so what's he need the headache for? You know what I mean? Like, because God can make himself more infinitely. And he has God... excuse me when I use he, it's just a you know, form of speaking. And I don't use it, so. Yeah. So God can increase himself. But how can God Here's the problem that God faces. How can God create himself in infinite varieties that have never existed and are beyond his imagination, beyond his manipulation, but are still him? How could you do that? Like, for example, if you do a painting or a sculpture or an invention or anything like that, right? It's just an inanimate object and sits there and you go, oh, so I did it. Okay. You know, big deal. Right? It doesn't have any will. It doesn't have any life. Now you make a child, and all of a sudden, you know, you and your wife make this child, and all of a sudden the child has a life of its own and says, hey, I don't need you. Screw off, you know. You know, I'll do whatever I want to do. You know, and it's like, you rude little thing, but you're wonderful. I mean, I love my kids' rebellion. You know what I mean? And then they become greater than me in their own ways. I mean, like, in ways I am greater than my father, not my heavenly father, but my natural father. And my son and my daughter will in some ways become greater than I am because they'll be different. And so God has created a universe that not only has plenty of stuff in it, but is also becoming infinitely more complex every single nanosecond and more rich and more varied. And he's doing it all, and it's all and God is becoming greater and greater and greater in terms of variety, experience, emotion, feeling, thought, perception. I mean, like, God is getting off on being me and you and you and you all in here talking about being God. I mean, can you imagine what a high this is for God? It's like, God's having this perception from all these different points of view, what it feels like. What it feels like to be me and to be thinking about God. Can you imagine contemplating yourself, contemplating yourself, contemplating yourself from all these different points of view? And then when you think of all the people in this world and all the people in the universe, and their lives are all focused on God ultimately, because that's all it is. Everything is God. I mean, when you're talking about a sob, you're talking about God. When you're talking about a cat, you're talking about God. You know, it's God seeing God through God through God. It's like...
way downtown to pick up mother, he said, you know, this is a 7-year-old, he said, you know so much more than I know. I said, but that's because I'm older than you are. I said, when you're the same age I am now, you'll know lots more than I know now. And he said, why? I said, because there'll be a lot more to know. And he said, okay.
Yeah.
Well, except that you gotta understand him. That's true.
But you wanted to ask one thing.
Right. It's kind of an absurd question. I wanted to know the shape of your intuition. Now, I mean, I know that you probably weren't concerned about intuition before, you know. And although I think we all have intuition, is it more a voice you hear or a feeling you get, or to kind of expound on your intuition?
Yeah. I think that the divine beings who are agents of God and God do communicate with us in a whole variety of ways. And I think the important thing is to just simply be sensitive. I mean, first of all, you know, first thing, he's got to ask the right question. And the second is he's got to listen for patiently for the answer. Yeah. And it's like sometimes I've gotten answers with a booming voice in my head. Like, one time I was kind of pissed at God because I thought he'd steered me astray. You know, and I was sort of like letting him have it. You know, it's like, you know, thanks a lot. I need just like a hole in the head. You know, great, you know, beautiful experience I'm having. I'm bored. I'm learning nothing. I mean, I'm like, I'm stuck. And like, I heard this voice in my head, trust me. They're like, all right. And then it turned out to be a really good experience. But most of the time, it's not that dramatic. Most of the time, it's...
does it take different forms sometimes?
Yeah, like, for example, I am like a cat getting its hair up on its back. I mean, sometimes you can be around something and you know that there's... Yeah. So, but the main thing that I have to do is I have to go... A lot of times look for the signs inward by sort of closing down and getting real quiet, getting centered, to use that terminology. And and
some or just
lots.
I mean, how are
Thoughts.
You often?
No.
Yes. Help or sense or feel that you get help?
Always.
Even if you're not asking, it comes because it's necessary or whatever. It's the time.
Yeah, but the thing is that if I'm unaware of it, then I might confuse it and think that I've done something wonderful or that I'm so great. Everybody's... Like, for example, I have a wife better than... I mean, I mistreated her and she's stuck with me and loved me. And like, why? Why? Is it because I'm so wonderful? Or is it because God loves me so much that he's given me this very loving person to love me? The truth of the matter is that it's nothing I did. It's God's doing. He brought that wonderful person to love me. And that's one of the ways that God is loving me is with that woman. And it's real hard to explain to her how that she's a manifestation of God's love for me. Because she doesn't believe in this stuff, but she is. She really is.
I understand.
Huh? Yeah, I keep her life interesting.
let's say you do get guidance or steering inside. Where does your free will enter into this picture? Of course, you always have the option to go with this or not go with this.
Absolutely. And I'm under no compulsion to be doing what I'm doing.
There's a term called enlightenment or self-realization that's bandied around a bit. Could you expound on that a bit with what you've learned and experienced? And I guess my sense of use of the phrase is realizing one's oneness with God, or God working through one, or God being a part of and of everything.
The most enlightened person I've ever met in this world in the last 3 years is an old lady that... I think I'm the only one in the world that knows she's enlightened. And this woman... That's the really beautiful part of it is that if you asked her who she was, she says, I'm nobody. But I had a long conversation with her once, and I got down to the nitty-gritty. And this woman is the most enlightened person I've ever met. And she's a perfectly ordinary, as a matter of fact, she's only had a third grade education, a real ordinary lady. Oh, thanks. She's at my church, and her husband's deaf, and so she translates for him. He said, what do you say he said? So I started talking, because I wanted to... I wanted to find out more about her. And there are lots of really very, very highly in touch with God people in the world, but they don't proclaim themselves. You know, that way. It's like, it's real tricky. This is a real tricky business, and it's something that I wrestle with. It's like, you know, talking to you all is like an ego boost to me, you know? It's like this strokes my ego. And like I want to stay humble, you know? And then there's like this thoughts like, he who knows does not say, and he who says does not know. And so like, if I was really enlightened, I wouldn't talk about God, I'd be gone somewhere. I mean, you can get all jammed up and everything, but the thing is that I've got to do where my heart's leading me, where I am, even including making an ass out of myself, if that's, you know, or tonight, one of the things I'll do is I'll say, this is what I'll pray. Thanks God for that experience. It was really wonderful. Now, you know, like make, you know, get me off the high that I'm feeling. Because I'll feel high tonight. I mean, I can tell you what's going to happen. I'm going to feel real high, and I'm going to have to ask God to get me off that and just and forget about it.
Accommodate it or ask for accommodation as opposed to eradicate it?
I'm not asking for eradication. I just want to be ordinary. I just want to be ordinary. You know, I just want to be grounded and normal. And like tomorrow when I get up, you know, do whatever happens tomorrow. One of the things that I try real hard to do is to have real open plans in my life. And that's real hard. You know, it's real, you all know it's real hard to juggle a schedule and have open tomorrow, you know, thank God I don't have any plans. Right? And that's like becoming more the exception than the rule. It would be really nice tomorrow morning to be there tomorrow morning, whatever happens, as opposed to, boy, last night those people listened to me talk, you know, big deal. Yeah.
But what you said so far, Howard,
Good, because that's the real important truth. That's the real important truth, is that it's just...
Re-experiencing it as if you were there again, and do you find that you want to go there? If you do, how do you go from that?
That's a real big problem, because when I first came back, I had a lot of times when I didn't want to be back, and all I wanted to do was to get there. And so I developed techniques for myself to sort of get a feeling like I couldn't ever get back there. No, I could never get back, but I could get develop techniques so I could sort of feel like kind of a little bit like what it was like, a little taste of it. And then I started getting real addicted to those. And I went through a stage of I wanted to be in meditation, prayer, contemplation, whatever you call it, all the time. And I didn't want any interference. It was like my poor sainted wife, you know, she couldn't even ask me if I wanted dinner. It's like, you know, it's like, you know, it got pretty funny. And then I was thinking, like, how am I ever going to get, I mean, how am I ever going to, like, do anything? Because what I really want to do is be 100% in this state, which is like a taste, a glimpse of what it was like. And I thought, well, maybe I'm missing the point again. Maybe what I got to do is just take that when I need it. And I do need it, and I have to do that. But I don't do it nearly as often as I'd like to, because, I mean, what I'd really like to do is to be in that state, but that would mean I would never do anything. You know? Yep. And I don't think that's the point of being here, is to be blissed up, because when that bliss is so much greater than anything you can experience here anyways, that when you get to that, I mean, why be here trying to be there? Why not be here fully? But unfortunately, it's not a cruel thing, but it's a hard thing that God does to some people, is give them a taste of real bliss and then put them back here, because Connie and I have talked about it. When I talked about it with all the other people that had near-death experiences, they all feel the same thing. So that's, in a way, maybe the biggest thing that they struggle with all their lives, is that part of them wants to be there and not here, and part of them's here and wants to do good here. And I wonder why, you know, people say, well, why did God choose you? And I said, I don't know. You know, beats me. Maybe he chose me because I can handle it, because I don't think a lot of people could.
Maybe he needed a bigger whack of it ahead of the 2x4.
Yeah.
Many people who go through near-death experiences end up being healers and psychics and things like that. Have you felt any need to help people in that way?
Yeah, and a lot of it was misguided. I mean, I'm still... Well, not just that, but I mean, some of those things aren't my gifts, too. I mean, some of those things are not for me. Like, I had this strong thing that I wanted to work with AIDS people, and my wife kept saying, that's just your ego. And finally, one night, and I kept saying, it's not my ego. I want to work with AIDS people. And finally, and she said to me, the only reason why you want to work with AIDS people is because you know that's the hardest. She said, that's the only reason why you have that desire is because those are the one people that nobody else wants to work. You know, it's like, it would be the ultimate, ego trip would be to work with the people that everyone else is afraid of. And she said, I know you'd go in there and tongue kiss them, just because nobody else will, Like, you'll slip them a wet one, And you won't get AIDS. It'll be because nobody else can do that, and you can do it. And you know what? And like, that pissed me off. I didn't like that. And it occurred to me she was absolutely right. You know, and the thing that I find that I do well on, I mean, and I have a lot of important self-work to do. So, I mean, like, my life isn't entirely devoted to other people. I mean, I spend time in prayer and meditation. I spend time in study, and I spend time in, just dreaming and wandering around, stuff like that. But the thing that I've found that I do well is the speaking part. And, the word prophet always put me off because I'm not a prophet. And then I looked up the word prophet. Prophet means an inspired speaker. Doesn't necessarily mean that you foretell the future. But I mean, I have a vision of the future, and I am an inspired speaker. And it finally occurred to me one day, I am an inspired speaker. I have the Spirit of God. When I speak about God's work, that Spirit is with me. I am a prophet, whether I like it or not. I can speak with God's inspiration because God has inspired me, has inspirited me. And so, well, what's so wrong about being a prophet? I'll be a prophet. It's funny to call yourself a prophet because it's ludicrous, right? But, I mean, according to the dictionary and definition, I'm a prophet.
All of the people that we were with at your house have made that same choice, though. We all went from really extreme getting it. I know I went right into nursing school and worked with one of the worst terminal cancer patients and all the adoption agencies and said, give me all the children that nobody else wants.
Yeah.
Didn't. And learned that ultimately the job is as communicator. And not necessarily communicating my story, but communicating my love.
Yeah.
And I saw that in Kim. I saw that in all those people.
Yeah.
I got another question, and I hate to bring it down to a personal level. But
I've been personal all night, so.
About my particular problem.
Yeah.
I've called Tourette's. Are you familiar with that? Well, I've read some psychic material about another being that's trying to harass you or something like that. And these people that have Tourette's, they break out in uncontrolled episodes of swearing and all this kind of stuff. And I think I've got that. I hear occasionally when I'll be sleeping, I'll feel a presence, and it's a woman, and she's laughing at me and things like that. But why would these entities do that?
Because they are not looking towards the light. They're not looking to ascend. What they're looking towards is they're hanging around here trying to fulfill a need that they have, and this person is getting fulfilled by harassing you. There's a couple different things that you could do if you want to get rid of them.
Great.
For example, one of them is whatever it is they make you feel that attracts them to you, feel the opposite thing. And like, for example, if they make you feel anguish and fear and stuff like that, the next time you feel their presence in them, feel absolute love for them. Tell them love them. Tell them that, talk to them about God's love for them. Preach to them. Be happy. Be joyful and stuff like that. They'll just absolutely drive them nuts. This is almost too much to hope for, but if the best possible thing that could happen is you can get them to literally see the light and change and move on and leave you alone. And the other thing that you can do, but it could backfire because it could give them the emotional... what they're picking up is your emotions. And that is that you could try doing some real serious sacred prayer and to ask them. But you can't do it in fear. You've got to, once again, you've got to do it in love. Because if you're doing it out of, like, oh, God, get this person on, you know, I mean, you're just going to feed them more. And they'll be, oh, boy, this is good stuff.
Yeah.
You know? So.
I went through it. I mean, I hear what where you're coming from and all that. And I went through a personal change, so 5 years or so, whenever I had a psychic experience where I experienced a previous death of mine. And since then, you know, I started investigating esoteric things,
uh-huh.
and I've changed a lot. And but these entities keep hanging around, you know. And I would think that through the change, it would get rid of them, but it hasn't. Any viewpoint on that, or I'm just not, maybe I haven't changed enough, maybe, or... But it seems like it's worse, almost, like now.
The answer to that is that you're still giving them, you're feeding them what they're attached to. And the thing is, it's not something really great and glorious that they're attached to. It's something real simple and base. And that what you need to do is to really identify is it. Yeah, and give them the opposite of that. Stop feeding them that.
I was speaking of Jesus, there's a lot of court bandied around about the second coming and next coming of the Christ consciousness here in our experience. What did you see in the future? What are your feelings on that?
Okay, this isn't from my experience, but this is since. Make that distinction. And that I very strongly believe that the second coming of Christ is when all of humanity accepts their roles as sons of God and not children. When all of humanity accepts their mature relationship with God, then the Christ will have come, the sonship. We will all have become the anointed one, and that, in fact, the Spirit of Christ will then truly live on earth. You know, as long as I'm holding you back, you can't be the Christ. You know, and my weakness, my evilness, my pettiness, my greed, my jealousy is holding you back. No matter how enlightened you want to be, I can do a pretty good job of distracting you, you know, right? I can keep you from your Father's, you know, Heavenly Father's business. So that's why it needs to be everybody.
It appears that the light is starting to dawn on the planet. I'm witness this group tonight and many groups like
yeah. this. I asked the angels why I had so many questions all the time. Why I always had all this cynicism and questions and doubt, which had seemed to lead me into the darkness as opposed to the light. And their answer was that was a special gift to have that kind of mind, a mind that was always restless, always seeking, always turning stuff over. But the abuse of that kind of mind was when you found an answer to never be satisfied with it and turn it over. Like, for example, how many people get a perfectly beautiful girlfriend or wife or whatever, and then the minute they have them, it's like, yeah, but what, you know, I mean, somebody else looking around at somebody else, right? I mean, that's an abuse. You know, if I, right? And so to be given the answer to a question, you know, and then to like, I'm saying, okay, great, yeah, but that's not what I was looking for after all. What I really wanted to know was something different, is it becomes an obsession, right, of never being satisfied, never finding the truth. So I think if how I interpreted your statement means that your mind is like my mind, always looking, always thinking, and sometimes like, stop, you know, have a little peace and quiet. the point is that it's a neat place to be if you can find answers and truth once in a while and accept them. Like, for example, you know, every once in a while I find myself thinking, yeah, but do I really, really know what I know, or... I mean, and I go, no, I can't go through this all over again. This is like, you know, what's really funny is that, like, I've read a lot of things about prayer and stuff, And like all these books tell you, this is the way to pray. This is the way to meditate. This is the way to contemplate. And the thing that I think, I mean, they all have good stuff to say, but the thing that's wrong is that there isn't any one way, because the way that is the right way is the way that works at that particular given moment in the state that you're in. So sometimes, you know, the most rewarding, relaxing thing of all is to be with a group of people singing hymns, you know, which is a fairly traditional kind of thing. Another time it might be doing a very formal kind of meditative approach. Another thing might be to go contemplate a flower. But the point is that if you pursue prayer or meditation in a whole variety of forms, you're pursuing a oneness with God, which is the same thing as pursuing peace, because peace is the wholeness of God, and the wholeness of God is peace. And that's exactly what shalom means. Is shalom is the wholeness of God, the peace of God. And so when you pursue prayer, you will find peace in any form that you pursue prayer. It could be vocal prayer, it could be silent prayer, it could be meditation. It could be all of them. I do little bits of everything all the time. Sometimes a lot of something. You know, but I like to do what feels good, not what somebody else told me is the way to God. Because I think, like Rinas Yogin said that if you study a yogic discipline, the first 5 years will produce no results, and then you'll be on the beginning of the path, and it's like, screw you. You know? Like, if you want to get to know God, you can have instant results, like here and now, right away. You know? I mean, it's real easy if that's what you want. You know, that's one of the things that, like, the evangelists do that the elitists don't do, is that they offer people immediate salvation, which is kind of neat in a way. And they can produce it, too. I mean, they can produce that warm, godly feeling if you accept, you know, salvation at that moment and fall on your knees. I mean, that's real. That's a real thing. Of course, it's limited. I mean, it has its limitations. So many people seek these super elitist, super difficult paths. I got a friend who went to India and studied with a super, ultra, top secret, nobody knows about him guru. And he had a book, but he didn't want me to see it because it was so super secret. And then, like, I read, you know, I finally got the book out of him, and he showed it to me and stuff like this. And this guru was saying, like, you know, it's just so difficult that you probably can't even do it, so you may as well close the book. So I read the book anyways. Yeah. And my friend thinks he's the only person in the world. I mean, he's, you know, he's got it because he went there. And he and the other 8 people that have done it.
Well, there's no one way.
Yeah. This woman that I said was the most enlightened woman I'd ever met, the old lady. The thing that she said to me, she said a lot of things to me, but the thing that said to me that knocked me out of my socks was, I said, well, how do you know there is a God? And she said, I felt God's presence with me all of my life. And I said, come on, you're kidding. And she said, no. And I said, day and night, asleep, awake? She said, yes. I said, have you ever been afraid? She said, no. And she said, how can you be afraid when you know God is with you? Like, I've never met anyone that, and this woman was serious. She was completely serious. She has felt, an old lady, and she's felt God's presence with her all her life. And it's like, well, I got a lot of growing through. Mm-hmm. The thing is that it's really impractical. Okay? You can't get anything done concrete, I mean, in the real world, if you're praying all the time. So, I mean, if you want to pray all the time, you're going to have to go become a recluse in a monastery, because there isn't even a monastery that will let you pray all the time. You'd have to become a recluse in a monastery. So, where they'd slip the food under the door for you and take up a slop bucket. So the thing is that, well, okay, if you feel a desire, like it might be neat to pray all the time, but it doesn't seem to be humanly possible. And there are people that suggest that it is possible, then what's the trick? And so what we thought of the solution to it is to set up a resonance inside yourself, since that your conscious mind is only a small part of your being, and that the greater part of your mind is this subconscious, then if you could set up a resonance in yourself by praying frequently through the day, and you really felt like that prayer, like the vibration of a bell being struck, you know, bong, you might only consciously pray periodically through the day, but the prayer resonates through your being all day long, and that way you can pray without ceasing.
The other thing, though, that I thought was interesting is you're saying prayer is the
process of awareness.
You're working towards total awareness and living in the moment and being aware of each, you know, attitude, activity, whatever coming towards you is praying. I mean, is it then being totally aware a safe prayer?
Yeah, because when you're totally aware, you're aware of God's presence in everything and everybody and everything that's happening.
Yeah. That's how you be in your brain.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't have to do anything.
Yeah,
yes, we had some really, really wonderful experiences with that. Not that particular thing, but just the fact that you get into your subconscious mind, and do some wonderful things. And if you can get in there and do some of these things, you can feel a lot of peace in yourself.
Yeah.
I know it's real, because I've experienced it. A lot of people in this room
For example, one thing that you can accomplish is that a lot of people that I've talked to have a lot of problems with lust. And by lust, I'm talking about excessive sexual desire. Not sexual desire, but more sexual desire than they want to have. Right? Yeah. Lust means excessive sexual desire, not sexual. I mean, people confuse that all the time, which is like, you know, they think that lust means any desire to have relations with somebody else. And that's not what it means. It means more than you want to have. So anyways, like I don't want to see women as sex objects. Because I'm an artist and work with a lot of nude models, before my experience, I was real good at stripping a woman down and having a fantasy sex relationship with her before she could even... I mean, she would walk by and I've already had her eight ways. You know, it's like, whoa, you know, this woman doesn't know how good it is. Well, after my experience, it was like, I don't want to see women that way. I don't want to use women that way. Women are not my toys. I want to see women as divine creatures, and I don't want to see them as sex objects. Okay? And I don't want to have fantasy sex with women anymore. So I had to pray my head into turning that all around. And occasionally I slip, but for the vast majority of the time, I don't see women as such sex objects, and I don't strip them, which is real easy. I mean, I'm an artist. I have imagination. I work with new models all the time, and it's real easy for me to strip a woman, and I don't do it, and I have no desire to do it, and I don't think about sex. Matter of fact, I've sort of gone overboard in that direction, which really blew my mind, because I've sort of... losing my interest in it altogether, which, you know, maybe I've gone too far, but I don't... Yeah. Lust, I think, has to do with people's desire to be loved. And so it makes a lot of sense to be really lusty, because everybody needs a lot of love, except that that kind of love isn't going to get you the love that you really need. Because it's like trying to live off candy bars.
We've confused sex and intimacy being synonymous with love.
And we've confused sex and unconditional God's love, too. I mean, people can achieve a divine union in sex, but I'm not talking about that. I mean, the idea of people crave physical pleasure because it's the only love they know. They don't know anything about God's love. And when you start filling yourself up with God's love, you have a decreasing desire for or need for, not a desire for, but a need for the other kinds of love, and therefore your desire for them sort of starts to dwindle.
The thing that focuses on the negative is our good and negative
and stuff. It needs to be led by the new people.
This world is so corrupt the way it is right now that if you really focused on that, you would commit suicide. That would be the only honest on earth. The way, if I look, and it's not because I'm so holy now or anything, but if I look at this world critically from the point of view that I saw this world from their point of view, through their eyes, I saw this world through God's eyes, through His angel's eyes. And from that point of view, as a human being, not as an angel, it's hopeless. But they're full of love and compassion and wisdom and full of hope and all that stuff. And so I have to focus on the good part. You see what I mean? You see what I mean? Because it's... How you going?
Take your thought further. You're saying that the negativity creates more negativity. We do these telethons to raise money for Ethiopia, and all we show is starving children. Wonder if we use the telethons to solve the deficit, showing how awful that poverty is, but to actually raise money for hunger... Show our abundance, our joy in our abundance, and let's chip in.
Yes. We live on an incredibly beautiful planet. There seems to be such incredible beauty here. Could you compare or relate the beauty that we perceive here, like on our beautiful world, with some of the beauty you saw on the other side? Is there a comparison?
That's a real interesting question, because as an artist, I've tried to make pictures to represent what I saw on the other side. And they've never been even close, because I don't have the tools. I don't have the eyesight, for example, that I had over there that I have here. I mean, here I see three primary colors and three secondary colors now. Over there I saw a lot more. I don't even know where I'd get the colors if I could see them. I mean, yeah. Big problem. So it's just real different. It's just real different. But the looking at people in another way, and you can see the spirit in them. You know, you can actually see the maybe not real clearly, but you can see the radiant being, the spiritual being in other people. And that's pretty beautiful.
I think it's something. Reading this photographer, she was talking about portraits and why she likes to do portraits. She says, you know how when you look at people and there's something you can't put your finger on, but you have to keep looking at them, and it's not something physical that you can touch.
Yeah.
She can never explain it, but that's what drives her to photograph.
Yeah.
And that's exactly how you that exactly.
Yeah. And the amazing thing is, of course, it's in everybody.
Isn't it a matter of evolution? You're revolving towards the angel kingdom. Is
yeah,
correct?
And all those angels were once. The angels were all once beings. The angels were all once physical.
Wake up.
And then. Oh yeah. I think that the reason why people don't accept the divineness in them is because there's been a lot of bad teaching which has made it seem impossible, or that you're going to have to give up too much. How many people have been taught, and I was taught this, that if there were a God, for God to love you, you have to be perfect. Okay, I cannot be perfect, so if there were a God, He couldn't possibly love me, so I'm not even going to think about this for another minute.
Or another rationalization is, my father is incapable of perfect love. If God is capable of creating a hell, and I know my own father would not condemn me to eternal damnation, what kind of God is that?
Right. The whole concept of hell is not biblical. It's real interesting, because there's no hell in the Bible. Doesn't exist. Christ, in talking about what happens to the trashes, he talked specifically about the Jerusalem town dump, Gehenna. And it was the dump outside of Jerusalem where people put all the trash and refuse, where they had Gehenna, G-E-H-E-N-N-A, which is a Greek adaptation of the Hebrew Gehenon, which is Valley of Hinnon. And Gehenna was kept burning. You know, they were good municipal dump. Those good municipal people, they kept the trash burning with sulfur, which is translated as brimstone. So the fire and brimstone of Gehenna, of hell, is the sulfur and the fire of the city dump of Jerusalem. And Christ would say, you know, he would give a parable and say, and this is going to end up in the dump. And the people that he was talking to, you know, like, knew what he meant. I mean, he was saying, this is the pits, this is the worst, this is the rubbish, and this is the good stuff. And he used vivid imagery that people could understand, you know, and then that got turned into this whole theological concept of this cruel, vengeful God.
Question. When you mentioned Jesus, now, to explore that a bit more, are we speaking of Jesus, the personality, or the Christ consciousness that came into the man Jesus? Whom are we speaking of here?
I think that my understanding of Jesus is real traditional, in the sense that I believe that he was fully human, 100% human, 100% divine, and that God sent his spirit into this man. He was a man.
Is this then what we call the Christ consciousness, God's consciousness?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And I believe that that spirit's now back with God, and it's like there's no way of separating them. I mean,
he got the same.
Yeah, lucky guy.
Howard, we thank you tremendously. Sure. I know it takes a lot of energy to do what you did tonight. And we appreciate that energy drawing us.
Okay.